Welcome to the Pan Am Podcast, brought to you by the Pan Am Museum in Garden City, New York. This podcast and our museum are dedicated to celebrating the legacy of the world's most iconic airline, Pan American World Airways. My name is Tom Betty, and I'm the host of this program. Thank you for joining us. This program is sponsored by the generous support of Mr. Adam Aaron, the CEO of AMC Entertainment Holdings Incorporated. The Pan Am Museum Foundation is a nonprofit organization. Please visit our website for more information at thepanammuseum.org. Again, our website is thepanammuseum.org. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. If you are using Apple Podcasts, please consider leaving a review. It will help others discover this program. If you're not familiar with Pan Am, welcome. We are honored to have you here and for you to learn about what we're all about. If you already know of Pan Am, worked for or flown on the airline, or just love our history, it's good to be with you again. So with that, let's get this episode in the air, so to speak. Welcome aboard your Pan American Jet Clipper. In this episode, we'll be exploring the art of travel posters. We'll be joined by guests Philip Keen, a Pan Am veteran flight attendant and collector, and Meg Williams of the company Stick No Bills, which restores and recreates high-quality travel posters in stunning detail with rich and vibrant colors. But first, a few updates on this podcast. This is the 30th episode of this program. That means there's around 50 hours of Pan Am content people around the world can listen to. Someone recently told me that I have a great voice and it helps them fall asleep at night. Not exactly what I was going for, but whatever works, I'm good with it. A quick shout out to some of our podcast superfans that I recently met while visiting New York. Rob Evans, Christopher Terry, and Kate Carley. I really appreciated their kind words and support. With the exception of Pan Am commercials during our breaks, we want to keep this podcast commercial-free with none of those annoying ads. If you like what we're doing on this program, please consider making a tax-deductible donation to the Pan Am Museum Foundation to support our mission of preserving our airline's incredible history. On a more personal note, I serve on the board of the museum, and this podcast is a passion project for me, and believe it or not, my work is all 100% volunteer. So if you like what we're doing, consider a donation in whatever amount you can afford. We are fortunate the podcast is sponsored by Mr. Adam Aaron, the CEO and chairman of AMC Entertainment, who is also the president of our sister organization, the Pan Am Historical Foundation. His sponsorship allows us to cover related costs with the publishing of this program and institutional fees associated with obtaining some of the archival news clips we use from academic sources. We thank Adam for his support and respectfully ask for your consideration of donations to preserve the legacy of Pan American World Airways for future generations to come. In the style of NPR, you can join me and even make a reoccurring monthly donation like I do. Please see the episode description for links on where to make a donation. Also, another update. There's more training tapes coming on our YouTube channel, so stay tuned. As of this recording, since May 2022, there has been over 1.3 million views on our YouTube channel, which is just incredible. If you have any items or VHS tapes you would like to donate to the museum, please don't hesitate to contact us. Earlier this year, many voted for this podcast in the People's Choice Podcast Awards. We are pleased to say that the Pan Am Podcast was nominated and made it to the final round in the history category. Almost 6 million listeners participated in this year's People's Choice Podcast Awards and selected 300 shows for 30 categories out of many thousands of podcasts. We would like to say congratulations to the History Category winner, a true crime podcast called The Fresh Hell Podcast. The Panion Podcast is most honored to be a 2022 People's Choice Podcast Awards nominee, and thank you for taking the time to vote and show your support. In addition, if you've ever wondered what my personal Panam story was and how I got connected with the Panam Museum, you're in luck. I recently had the honor of being a featured guest on an episode of the Shared History Podcast. I had a great time speaking with hosts Natalie and Cass, where we talked about the legacy of Pan American, our love of the movie Catch Me If You Can, and I shared my own story of being an 11-year-old boy on the upper deck of a 747 crossing the Atlantic Ocean on a family vacation. And that's where my love affair with Pan Am began. Take a listen to the Shared History Podcast. They really do a great job of making history not only informative, but it's a lot of fun to listen to with a dose of comedy. It's one of my favorites. I am featured in episode 88, and there's a link in the episode description, but do listen to more than just my episode. Nat and Cass, you're awesome, and thank you for having me as a guest. It was an honor. Now let's explore the art of travel posters. As the young commercial airplane business began to stretch its wings in the late 1920s, it found itself in direct competition with two other modes of transportation. The first was the tried and true of the grand ocean liners crossing the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. The other was originally invented as a weapon of war by the Germans in World War I, which then evolved into luxurious passenger airships after the war in the 1920s, most notably the Gruff Zeppelin, which could cross the Atlantic Ocean in 3.5 days with clear weather. Keep in mind that during the early and mid-1920s, airplanes were used mainly for stunt attractions and transporting mail faster than rail. Most people used trains for travel, and the elite used ocean liners, and the ultra-elite booked passage on the German Zeppelins. Also during the mid-1920s, most believed that the Zeppelins would be the way people would travel the world in the future. Architects of this era even envisioned Zeppelin ports on the top of skyscrapers. However, the Zeppelins never came to Pan Am, even though the airline's founder, Juan Trippe, who later took a voyage on the Hindenburg with his wife Betty in 1936, served on the board of the Pacific Zeppelin Transport Company, and important Pan Am stockholders had shares in that company. So all of this sets up the stage for the art of airline travel posters. As the commercial airline industry was in its infancy in the late 1920s when Pan Am was founded, the young airlines had some serious competition with grand ocean liners and especially the German Gruff Zeppelin. Pan Am had to make their presence known to the elite traveling public, and they saw travel posters as the perfect vehicle to introduce their airline. While offering a similar luxury travel product their competitors had, airlines needed to engage a public possibly wary of the new mode of transportation in an aeroplane. By focusing their marketing and advertising campaigns on speed, comfort, and technological innovations, the airlines strived to assure potential travelers airplanes was the future of passenger travel. Enter the travel poster. Debuting during the Art Deco period, airlines secured the services of many top artists of the day to lure and reassure new customers. Full-color images of romantic, exotic destinations filled the frame, each featuring a myriad of at least one iconic site: Christ the Redeemer in Rio, the Eiffel Tower in Paris, the Alps in Switzerland, Germany, and France, tempting elites with winter and summer sports. Now, there really was a fast boat to China, the flying clipper ships of Pan American Airways. As the 1930s came to an end, along with the end of the Zeppelins as the world was plunged into World War II, travel poster themes shifted as airlines were keen to let the public know that they were doing their part for the Allied effort. Posters gave witness to once luxurious civilian aircraft being drafted into service, supplying troops, and helping secure victory with innovations that would lift aviation even higher in terms of speed and security. Radar, enhanced navigation, and pressurized cabins became the norm. Flying above the weather became a popular refrain, along with the promise to fly ever more swiftly to one's destination. At the end of World War II, posters confidently proclaimed the dawn of a whole new world for passengers has begun. The post-war years included the everyday traveler and encouraged them to get up and go, as was the tagline in a late 1960s Pan Am campaign. Advertising pushed the introduction of lower fares, transforming the dream of adventure into an accessible journey through the skies. Some airlines really moved their tails for you and declared that they were the only way to fly. The look of advertising began to change radically with the deregulation of the late 1970s and democratization of the airline business. Gone were most of the hand-drawn fantasy art, replaced with photographic images of locales, oftentimes focusing on a single image to represent a place and its people. Flying became the only truly modern route for the long-distance traveler. The period artwork illustrating airlines on the walls and windows of travel agencies were pasted over or regulated to history's round file. Some, however, have been appreciated as much for the dreamy backward glance at the past as they are for outstanding and collectible works from some of the world's greatest artists, both renowned and anonymous. Now on to our interview with Pan Am collector Philip Keane and Meg Williams of the company Stick No Bills. The website of Stick No Bills is sticknobillsonline.com. There is a link in the episode description. The company Stick No Bills was established in 2011 by Philip James Baber, originally head of consumer advertising across the financial magazines of the Financial Times Group in London, before becoming a professional advertising photographer and poster designer. His wife, Meg Gage Williams, is a former intelligence and security risk analyst that provided threat alerting in conflict zones. She was greatly inspired by her great-great-uncle, David Mackenzie Ogilvy, CBE, the so-called father of advertising, to make a career change from counterintelligence to the graphic art world with her husband. The British husband and wife team founded Stick No Bills in Sri Lanka shortly after the war ended there, with the objective of, in Meg's word, quote, cheering everyone up and giving intrepid visitors to the recovering island a vibrant memory of their travels, end quote. They did this by producing spectacular vintage-style poster art and fine art prints exclusively licensed and via which the International Enterprise fundraises for humanitarian, conservation, and reforestation projects underway within the iconic places championed in their images. 10 years on, Stick No Bills has grown rapidly both online and in art galleries, fashion, and travel markets, and is now widely regarded as the world's leading licensed poster art specialists, creating safe harbor, remastering, printing, and the retail center of excellence for historic vintage poster art collections. Check out their website at sticknobillsonline.com. Their posters range from affordable to exclusive, but all are the highest of quality and color vibrancy. For listeners of the Pan Am podcast, Sticknobills is providing a special discount with any purchase from their online store. By using the promo code PANAMPODCAST, no spaces, at checkout, you will receive a free 24 by 36 inch lithograph of one of their best-selling proprietary Mallorca or salon travel posters with their Pan Am prints. Again, the promo code is PANAMPODCAST with no spaces. This code is also in the episode notes for your convenience. Welcome back to the Pan Am podcast, Philip, and welcome Meg Williams to the podcast. Today we're going to be talking about the art of travel posters. Philip, why don't you give us a little talk about the importance of this artwork?
Well, for me, it's not just that they're pretty. For me, as an amateur historian, one of my degrees is in history. It tells a story of what's going on in the world. If you look at these early travel posters, I think what they're getting across is speed and safety. We're talking about the 1920s and 1930s. Moreover, in the 1930s, they're in competition with the Graf Zeppelin. It was very expensive, as was typical airfares on airplanes. But their main competition were the steamships and the ocean liners, not to be confused with today's cruise ships, which are a completely different animal, which would take weeks or even a month, depending on the distance of travel, whereas the airplanes could get you there in days. And they'd had to compete a little bit with the Zeppelin and the ocean liners in luxury. And I think they had the same sort of client base at the time, which were the very wealthy and the well-connected and royalty. So they were in competition with one another to provide amenities that they could find on similar modes of transportation. And I think there were the posters at this time reflected all of that. So they're depicting these far-off destinations where the pre-jet set would travel to, and showing what amenities and goodies they could find on board. And they all looked very glamorous. Safety was not something we were promoting at the time, because it was not as safe as it is today. So I think the main emphasis on the beginning was the time that it would take to get you to one of these places. And they're using a lot of illustrations from different artists making the aircraft look speedier than they actually are. This is the day of before jets, when most of the airplanes were taking off on water. It's that kind of thing in the beginning. Most of the crews on a lot of these things were exclusively male. There were some carriers that did hire female flight attendants or stewardesses, as they were known at the time, because if a woman was on the plane, the thinking was at the time that it had to be relatively safe, you know. And also, seeing a woman on board the aircraft would typically calm the nervous passengers' nerves. And you had to think at the time that this was not an endeavor for the weak-hearted or for the ones with a delicate stomach, because they were not flying above the weather. They were flying only thousands of feet above the ocean or above the land. So they're subject to all the wind and rain and the noise and the cold. So it wasn't as glamorous as we may make it out to be, but it was still an interesting way to travel.
And Meg, before we talk about the exotic nature of a lot of these posters and the adventure that it was telling a story, let's talk a little bit about your company, Sticknobills. Let's start with the name.
Thank you very much, Tom and Philip. Lovely to be reconnected with you again, having been together.
And you too.
Yeah, well, it was so fantastic to all be at the gala together in New York just a couple of weeks ago. That was a fantastic experience for me. I felt very privileged to be there and in amongst so many fascinating people, you know, all part of the Pan Am community. And to start with the name Sticknobills is provocative and ironic, because better known as Postnobills on the walls of powerhouses all over the United States, the instruction is to not put up posters. our absolute passion is upholding posters. Our mission is to really carve out the space that they deserve in the art market as a genre of art. And within that niche, within that space, for us to be the market leaders championing the very finest travel poster art that has been created over approximately 120-year span, which we start in the 1880s when Toulouse-Lautrec and the other great artists of Paris in their day worked out how to do colour lithography for the first time. What Stick No Bills is all about is really charting the whole history of the advent of poster art as it's played out and as it was innovated by different iconic production entities over the last 120 years. So for my husband, Philip, who's creative director of Stick No Bills, when we established our company 12 years ago, we very much had Pan Am in mind as a source of inspiration for us. Because we were pretty far flung ourselves at that point. We were based in Sri Lanka. The war was just ending there. And we were both looking to retool and do something more positive and colourful than what we had been doing historically, which was more orientated in my part around security and counterterrorism. Phil's part, he was an ad man at the Financial Times in London. And we found ourselves in this very, I use the word exotic in inverted commas, but a very far-flung part of the world where my grandparents had passed through their 20s just after they married, where my aunt was born on a tea plantation, and where the British Air Force had actually established a base on a lake called Kogala, which is in the southern province of Sri Lanka. That it's actually a lagoon. It's connected to the ocean. And we lived on that lake. And that lake was a pit stop for the a refueling point for the Clipper Neptunes of the sky that were flying all the way from Perth to Sri Lanka, and then from Sri Lanka, which was then known as Ceylon, onto Europe. So it was just this sort of twist of fate that we ended up living at this location, which had a very romantic resonance to it in the history of aviation. I believe it was Qantas's Australian Air Force predecessors who made the first 26-hour flight from Perth to Kogala. And when you landed at Kogala on that Clipper seaplane, I believe you were awarded an Order of the Double Sunrise, a badge of honor for having seen the sunrise or set, depending on which way you were going, twice during that. At that time, I think that was the longest haul flight. So all of that history, we tried to crystallize into an image that we designed. And it's of a very elegant young, I think she's sort of imagined that she's like a British Army officer's wife or an Air Force officer's wife. And she's sitting with her luggage waiting to board the Clipper seaplane, and the luggage is being passed up into the plane. And that was just how we began, really, was designing travel posters that were aviation themed. And then realizing that over time, there was only so much fresh creation and design we could do when both of us knew that the great past masters of this art were, we could never touch them in terms of the talent that was applied in the 40s and 50s by the greatest artists of their time in quite healthy competition commissioned by the airlines of the time to depict in imagery these places to which Pan Am was really pioneering, connecting these places and making them accessible destinations. And so the greatest artists of their time were commissioned to do these illustrations. They hold such resonance to this day, and I think become all the more important the further into the 21st century we go. Because what we discovered through having our own private collection, like Philip does, of original vintage posters, is that many of them, these lithographs that were produced in the early 20th century, now that we're in the 100 years on, many of them are literally disintegrating as we speak. So for us, we realized it was a kind of preservation mission for our own private collection, but also for the purpose of the history of art, really, to identify the most iconic of these images and then track down the originals and then go through the process of scanning them at a museum level of the highest quality scans we could, and then digitizing them and then restoring them to their full former glory as digital images, and then printing them with techniques and tools that are far advanced on what the first editions were printed on, and therefore ensuring that for future generations, these images are still going to be out there in circulation and produced on materials that are designed to last, to not fade, to not discolor over time. And within that context, for us, Pan Am was absolutely at the pinnacle of this kind of kaleidoscopic odyssey, if you like, of place-centric poster art that was designed in the mid-20th century. And for our customers who come to us from all over the world, to our galleries in Sri Lanka, in Mallorca, Palma de Mallorca, where I am right now, in Sweden, and I hope very soon in the United States and England, they absolutely love the Pan Am brand. And a lot of them, before we even featured Pan Am as our licensed source of images in the galleries, they would walk into the gallery and say, "Oh my goodness, this reminds me of Pan Am." So it's the greatest honor for us to now be in this bizarre position of actually having the privilege of being globally officially appointed by the airline that, in its, you know, that really was our original source of inspiration for the proprietary designs that we have in our collections for Asia and Europe and America.
I love this story. And to our listeners, and I'm sure Philip can back me up on this, these posters are stunning in person. Just the vibrancy of the colors, absolutely stunning. We had one on display at our gala, and it was just stunning. I was speechless. And I thought to myself, I need to put that in my place. And then I asked how much it was, and it was over $10,000. So I quickly said, "Well, I guess that's not going in my place."
But having seen it, I have to say it's well worth it. And the framing was beautiful, and the crispness of the colors, and what you've done to adding the gold foil and the silver leaf and things like that. It's they truly are remarkable pieces of art that you have helped, that you have created. I just, beautiful, Meg, just beautiful work.
Thank you so much for saying that.
I would like to pause for a second, and we'll come back to the travel posters in a moment. But you said something that our listeners would probably say, okay, if Tom doesn't ask this question, how could he not? And you said you did counterterrorism. I'm sure you can't tell us more than that, but I did want to follow up on that.
Yeah, no, I was my own employer, so to speak. I was always private sector, Tom. But my focus was, this is why I was talking about wanting to do something a bit more cheerful and colourful. Before 9/11, I started nerding on a guy called Osama bin Laden, building a research capability in London around al-Jihad and then al-Qaeda. When 9/11 happened, we were suddenly extremely busy and went on to develop a capability that covered, I think, 60 conflict zones at its peak. We set up a 24/7 control center, and we worked kind of inter-agency between different international government organizations, governmental and private sector. And really, it was quite simple. We were just trying to stop people from being needlessly killed working in high-risk environments through providing threat assessment and risk analysis and don't go down that road kind of information. I wrote a book on kidnapping in Iraq with a gentleman called Brian Jenkins from RAND. And actually, I was in touch with him just yesterday because, funnily enough, his focus was on hijackings in the 60s and 70s. And he documented every single case study that there was. And I just came upon it yesterday, just his, you know, what he wrote in 1974. And by 1974, Pan Am had been involved in 11 incidents already at that stage. So, you know, maybe it's another reason why I'm drawn to the brand, because I feel very personally the pain that Pan Am's been through. over the years, being sort of, you know, inadvertently on the front line, so to speak, of asymmetric types of warfare. Yeah, so really it was a 10-year career. It was fascinating. But then I met my husband, who gave me a surfboard and told me to stop speaking in acronyms and, you know, to really sort of focus. Well, together we just decided to do something more creative and more positive. But we still fundraise for organizations that we admire wholeheartedly, that are making a tremendous impact on a humanitarian level in the conflict zones where I used to work.
Okay, admirable. This is a volunteer job for me, you know, doing this podcast, but it's one of the best jobs I've had because I get to interview and talk to fascinating people, and everybody has a story, and it's just really, really interesting. So I thank you for sharing your background. Philip, let's get back to travel posters. So you have one of the best collection. There's only a few people in the world that can rival Mr. Keene's collection of Pan Am. Can you tell us a little bit about how popular these Pan Am travel posters are? And then afterwards, we can go back to Meg and she can tell us more about her company and what they have to offer.
The posters are really, really popular in the sense that they are becoming rarer and rarer as time goes on, as Meg has told us, because of the age of these things and because they're temporary nature of them. They're only meant to be put up and then eventually discarded for new and better ones, depending on the locations and destinations. So finding them in really good condition is very lucky. And when I do, I'm very happy about it. And sometimes they need a bit of restoration. I found a place in California that does an amazing work, paper restoration. It can all be reversed if necessary, and then they're mounted on linen for preservation's sake. And I am attempting to, this is a long-term goal, to collect every single one that Pan Am has ever issued. And I'm well on my way. I think I've got about 200 so far. And I know that many, many hundreds more are out there. But I'm still on the hunt for them. I have some duplicates of some and am willing to trade if anybody else has something that they want to trade that I'm interested in. So there's that aspect of it. And the earliest one that I have, I think, is from the late 1930s. And it's featuring this young, almost Hummel kind of Hummel figurine couple in Bavaria against a cartoon background of the mountains. And the latest one I have is from the 1990s when they all went to almost pure photographic images. But the ones that are my favorite are really from the mid-century period, more cartoony, if you will, and hand-drawn, beautiful, rich colors and really clever imagery on them.
What is your favorite, Philip? Of all the travel posters out there, what's your favorite?
Well, there's one I'm looking at right now. It is Advertising England, and it is a woman who would not be a stranger on Carnaby Street in the mid-1960s with a bright red and pink bob, cute little red lips, and the irises of her eyes are actually the Union Jack. She's got blue eyeshadow on, and a beauty mark just below the left side of her mouth, which is the Pan Am logo.
It's a very clever illustration.
Yeah, it's so evocative of the time, and you know exactly where you are when you look at this. So many of them are that way. They may not even have the name of the destination on them, but the imagery on there tells you all you need to know. There's one here that's advertising France, but it's more specifically Paris, because you can see in the background the Garnier Opera House, and you've got a French waiter in his white apron and a French policeman in his little cap sharing a glass of red wine across the cityscape.
Meg, do you have a favorite Pan Am travel poster?
Oh, God, it's a bit of a...
It's a difficult question. Right now.
No, there's so many, but I have to say I completely agree with Philip that for me it's the pre-photographic era that's the most fascinating. And when, you know, these hand-drawn, hand-painted illustrations were, you know, that the artist really had to think and do it once and well, you know, come up with an image that encapsulated all of the kind of the most sort of iconic aspects of the destination that was being advertised. And so I think for me, the Paul George Lawler collection within the Pan Am chronology that, you know, dates from 1927 right through to the early 90s, Paul George Lawler was commissioned right in the early days to do the destination marketing for Rio and Hawaii and New York. And those three particular images, they just blow me away. And I can't wait to have the privilege of, you know, permitted by Pan Am, being able to, at the pixel, at the microscopic level, remaster them so that we can print them 40 by 60 inches and really bring back the colors. And just the quality of the illustration is incredible, the detail. There's one for the South Seas as well, which I absolutely love. And unfortunately, because it's so beautiful and so evocative, it is also one of the most pirated images of the Pan Am collection. And I think that's another thing that's been really interesting about this sort of 6-year process, really, of coming to this point of launching, is that we've been trying, like Philip, to treasure hunt and to join the dots and to build a collection that's as comprehensive as possible. And just slipped between the gaps and, you know, went out of circulation without anyone, it seems, archiving them. And occasionally you come upon something that's completely, you know, undiscovered for 50 years. And that's a moment of real excitement for us. But I think for me, the images that are marketing the places that I want to go to the most are also the ones that I love the most. So I've never been to Nassau. I'd love to go. The posters for Nassau are stunning. I'm yet to go to Hawaii, and I absolutely would love to go there. And my goodness, Pan Am has so much to do with that, because there must be at least 10 very strong Hawaii images that Pan Am produced over the years. Jamaica, Calcutta. I think the image for Calcutta is incredible. It's of the Temple of the Jains, which is just a stunning piece of architecture. Very, very, you know, extraordinary. Interesting as well that the emphasis is on Calcutta. When you're looking at an image like that from a, you know, 21st century perspective, you realize how the whole way in which the advent of commercial aviation panned out and, you know, different places came to the fore as refueling stops and as destinations in themselves. You know, Calcutta today is just not a tourist destination, you know, whereas other places in India have risen to take that place. I also love the ones that don't advertise the country. They advertise the city, because from my own sort of personal perspective, I'm not here to sort of wave any national flags. That's not my intention. You know, Stick No Bills is all about celebrating the love of travel and the whole like evolution of style and fashion and art through travel posters. And that's the project, really, rather than sort of in danger of being caught up in any sort of nationalist agendas. But that said, there are then some fantastic ones that are country posters. There's one series that was done in the, just as they were on the beginning of the photographic era called Women of the World, which I think from a gender identity point of view is absolutely worth. I would love to do an exhibition just of those, because it really timestamps stereotypes of women from different countries, but in a very innocent and lovely way. So for Sweden, it's a very beautiful blonde wearing a red roll neck jumper. And for England, it's a girl who looks a bit like Mary, Queen of Scots. And for Tahiti, it's a woman holding out a flower, you know, sort of looking incredibly sweet and seductive. And I could go on. Every single country depicted through this one character, it says a lot about gender identity and, you know, stereotypes of men and women over the years, really. And I think, yeah, just culminating, I mean, some of the latter day Brazil posters that Pan Am did really, really do our testimony to sort of, I would say, like sort of sexual emancipation over the 60s and 70s. There's this kind of freedom about them, which is very much of their time. So yeah,
I have that one right in front of me now. That one of the three okay. the three samba dancers and in their high heels. Yes,
exactly. but yeah, so I mean, each and every one is an absolute treasure, and there's so many different levels of stories that unfold behind each image. So first of all, about the illustrator that was commissioned to do them. But then also about the provenance of the production of the poster, of where the posters, the first editions were printed, therefore how they've weathered over time. For example, it's quite interesting to see Braniff, that was competition with Pan Am in the 40s, 50s, 60s. They were producing their posters in South America. On paper that they were sourcing locally down there, and actually using illustrators in South America to depict America. And that's fascinating because, you know, you think kind of colonialism and post-colonialism and all the sensitivities around the way in which countries outside of Europe and the United States are depicted, and how they can be charges of them being reductive or, you know, in some way sort of injurious to the people. But it's really fascinating to see the way that South American illustrators were depicting sort of oil tycoons of Texas, for example, in their illustrations. There's a lot of tease going on there as well.
We're going to take a short break with a commercial from the late 1960s.
A spiral staircase. Very plush.
Hey, I think I've got it. It's a townhouse in New York, isn't it?
No, it's more like a chic new lounge.
No, it looks more like an ocean liner to me.
Mm-hmm. No, it's more like some grand hotel.
Yeah. Or maybe one of those restaurants that looks down on everything, you know?
Maybe it's some kind of movie theater.
Or some secluded rendezvous.
Very.
Pan Am introduces the incredible. The plane that's a ship. The ship that's a plane. The Boeing 747 Superjet. First takeoff December 1969. On the world's most experienced airline.
One of the things to our listeners, and Philip, I don't know if you know this. So Meg Williams, our guest for this episode, is the owner of the BOAC trademark. So Meg, please tell us more about that.
It's the trademarking of British Overseas Air Corporation that we wanted to make sure that, you know, was unassailable in the posters as we brought them back on behalf of British Airways. The graphic for BOAC had been trademarked over the years, but the actual words connected and put together had not. So we're a little bit obsessed with making sure that we and our licensors are on very safe ground when we go about putting these 21st century editions into production. And so it was for that reason that we felt it necessary to, on behalf of British Airways, add that trademark registration in as part of the process that led up to us launching the BOAC collection in September, which, you know, really being British, I guess it made sense as well to start at home. As far as I understand it, and Philip, probably you can speak more to this than you too, Tom. I think BOAC shared a lot of roots with Pan Am, but Pan Am provided most of the muscle and most of the actual assets for those routes, and quite rapidly far exceeding BOAC in terms of its reach and the amount of flights it had up in the air at any one time. So, yeah, I think with them and our other licensor, Lufthansa, we are really on a mission to build a safe harbour and a centre of excellence for all of our esteemed licensors in the aviation industry, so that we can build under the brand name Stigner Bills one rock solid collection that is, you know, comprehensive for our customers, so that they can you know, come onto our website and choose whichever airline and whichever destination they're interested in, and up will come these beautiful posters.
That's fantastic. Philip, let's talk about Peter Max and some of the other famous artists that did posters for Pan Am and other airlines. Can we talk a little bit about the famous Peter Max 747 early 1970s poster?
Sure. I've only ever seen that in a poster book format. I've never seen an actual full-size version of it. I've had a couple of those over the years, and I think they're really interesting, but I'd love to get my hands on one of those. But it's the iconic image of the 747 flying against a what I want to call a Sergeant Pepper sort of background with stars and their trailing edges kind of making up the whole background of it in these wild psychedelic colors. And it's very 1960s to me, although the 747 didn't take flight commercially until 1970. But I think leading up to that, of course, all the artwork was being produced. And at the time, I think it was 69, Pan Am started taking reservations to the moon. So all of that spaciness in all its aspects, whether it be psychedelics or actual trips to the moon, I think were pretty prevalent at that time, you know, during the production of these travel posters.
Yeah, it's just stunning. So you have a very interesting background, Meg. And now you're doing, obviously, I mean, we can hear it, you know, through this interview, something that you just love. And you and your husband have built this wonderful company. How does this all make you feel when you see your poster now being, displayed in prominent places?
Oh, well, I mean, they're not our posters. You know, we really feel that we're providing a service here to Pan Am and for our customers for the first time. I think Bryce Cooper is creative director for Pan Am. And he it's very interesting what he said. He said, you know, of all of Pan Am's treasures, all of their artifacts, the thing that's the most potent and powerful of all is the poster art. And yet, ironically enough, it's the aspect of the artifacts that's been leveraged the least until now, until Stikno Bills came along and put a hand in the air and said, let us take care of this for you on a global level. Because for 12 years, our business has grown exponentially, despite, you know, we've had, unfortunately, very close shades with terrorism ourselves in Sri Lanka, pandemic. There's been all sorts of challenges like everyone on the planet's been going through recently that could have pulled us asunder. But the demand for the appetite for vintage posters just completely, you know, just it's a trend that is not going away. It's growing stronger. And within that trend, the demand for iconic aviation poster art specifically has really come to the fore. And I would say of all the different types of poster art, it's the most popular today.
Philip, anything you'd like to add to our listeners about the art of travel posters?
I don't really know what else to add except to say that it's something that has really piqued my interest over the years, and it's something that unless you have a really big space, I don't think you can fully appreciate all of the images that you can gather. But it's really a wonderful thing that I think a lot of people can afford rather than maybe some other original pieces of artwork. And they're so evocative, and I love the style of them and the imagery. And I've learned a lot from you too, Meg, on tonight's call. So I appreciate that. There's a lot more information that I need to be better versed in. So thank you for that. And I just going to continue to collect and to share these things. And I'm hoping other people appreciate it as much as I do.
And I will say to our listeners, Philip Keane is one of the most generous people I've ever met. And all of his collection, he is very generous with it for the purposes of the museum, the Pan Am Museum, and our mission. So I did want to recognize you, Philip, for that, and thank you.
Well, thank you. And I also wanted to say to Meg, thank you so much for being such a wonderful person and a stand-up company and producing such beautiful pieces of artwork.
Oh, Philip, the pleasure's all mine. I mean, I just need your listeners to know that we don't sell all of our prints at $10,000, okay? When we bring an image back to life, or we design a new image, we start with a master edition, and that's a one over one. There will never be another one, and we make it singular, not only through the highest caliber printing and conservation framing that goes into producing it as a complete piece. But we also have the British Royal Yacht Gilder, Julian, who lives here on the island of Mallorca, come in, and he applies 24 karat gold to the letters on it. And normally we're emblazoning the letters of the name of the place, so Mallorca or New York or Tokyo. But in the case of the one that we donated to Pan Am Museum for the purposes of auctioning, for fundraising for the foundation and all its important work, we actually emblazoned the words Pan Am. So we took the beautiful logo of Pan Am, and we applied 24 karat gold to it, and it just felt like absolutely the right thing to do at the point of entering the US market with our formula, to start with this particular incredible trademark and incredible collection of art. And I really think the future is very, very bright for the Pan Am Historical Foundation, the museum, and the brand in general. I really do foresee that, there's good forces are going to converge in terms of bringing to fruition, I hope, in one space, a sort of experiential, journey back through time into a kind of Pan Am world. And that's something that we would love to play a part in with the poster art that we're generating.
Excellent. Well, we can't thank you enough for your support and all of your work in bringing these posters back to life. And I mean, really, you have to see them to believe them, because the colors are just so vibrant and stunning. I know I've said that several times on this program, but it's the only two words that come to mind, is vibrant and stunning. And I'm a little speechless over it. So Stick Note Bills has Pan Am and BOAC and the Orient Express, correct?
Oh, the Orient Express. Well, with the Belmond Group, yeah, that's a work in progress. But yeah, trains, planes, and aeroplanes. But I think planes that's first. And Pan Am, we are absolutely super excited about. And just to explain, or to ease any sort of panic about pricing amongst your listeners as well. We have this fantastic global print fulfillment partner that is American. And founded by a gentleman who specialized in fine art printing in the 1980s in Los Angeles, before his company grew to become, global in its, he has factories on every continent. So any of your listeners anywhere, wherever they are, if they're in Melbourne, for example, and they order a Pan Am poster, it's going to be printed in Melbourne. It's going to be printed on archival quality paper. And it's going to be shipped to their door from a factory that's, 20, 40 kilometers max away. And that's for us so important, because we're all about sustainability and trying to cut down carbon emissions and speed up the pace at which customers can get access to the prints that we produce. And this American gentleman who founded our global print fulfillment partner, he's an amazing guy, and actually they have their own forests, so they're producing their own trees. They're planting three for every one that they cut down for paper and frame production, and they use Swiss technology and machinery. They've got facilities all over the United States, so I'm delighted to say it's off the back of quite a few years of behind the scenes prep. But if anyone wants to order online now for as little as $30, we can get a poster to them that's super high quality.
I can attest to that. They're beautiful images, and I've seen the ones you're talking about, and they're gorgeous.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I think some redecorating is in my future, in my place.
Well, when you come visit Palm Springs, Tom, I'll show you the rest of the collection.
All right. Sounds good. Anything else either of you would like to add about travel posters and Pan Am posters and stick no bills.
Meg?
Well, no, I just think there's one thing. You interviewed Frank Abagnale, is that how I said
it? Abagnale.
Yeah, Abagnale. And there was one thing that he said that's just really stuck in my mind. It was the day that he put on a Pan Am uniform was the day that he realized he could get away with almost anything. and that really has stuck with me because, you know, the power of the Pan Am brand is sort of summed up in a maverick way in that statement. You know, this brand that, you know, came into being out of the Air Force and the Navy, but was, you know, very much a nimble and fast moving, you know, commercial brand, but had this stylistic, you know, quality and edge to it that, you know, very much is the romance of Pan Am, I think, is that kind of, you know, that mix of the brand and it's what it projects being, you know, both glamour, but at the same time, the sense of being highly trusted and experienced and, you know, very well run, which I think, yeah, it's pretty unsurpassed in that context.
Having worn the uniform, I can attest to that. You can get away with almost anything.
Well, that's another episode of the Pan Am podcast where Philip Keane will share all his secrets. For our listeners, I do need to point out that Pan Am Brands is the holder of the copyright and logo of Pan Am. Well, thank you both for your time. And I just can't say it enough. Go to Stick No Bill's website. It will be in the episode description and check out all their beautiful artwork. You guys have just done a wonderful job of restoring and preserving travel posters and travel artwork for future generations to come. And you, Philip, the two of you are really making a dent in the universe. And, you know, saving all this wonderful artwork for future generations. So thank you both for your time.
Well, Tom, thank you for having us.
Yeah. Yeah. You do a great service for Pan Am as well. They're very lucky to have you.
Thank you. Pan Am was a pioneer in air travel and still stands as one of the most iconic and innovative airlines in aviation history. That legacy lives on at the Pan Am Museum in Garden City, New York, where you can explore the rich history of the aircrafts and individuals at the heart of the company known as the world's most experienced airline. For more information about the Pan Am Museum, check out our website at www.thepanammuseum.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. As was once a tagline in one of our commercials, we would greatly appreciate your support to help the Pan Am Museum continue making the going great. You can also support the museum by shopping on our online store for all things Pan Am, accessories, apparel, jewelry, books, models, and posters. We want to hear from you. If you have a question for us or want to share your story, our email address is podcast@thepanammuseum.org. As flight crews once said to passengers departing for their destinations around the world, thank you for flying, Pan Am.